The story of Daniel in the lion's den continues in chapter 6, verses 19 through 28. Let us listen together for God's word. At dawn, at the first sign of light, the king rose and rushed to the lion's pit. As he approached it, he called out to Daniel, worried, "Daniel, servant of the living God, was your God, the one you serve so consistently, able to rescue you from the lions?" Then Daniel answered the king, "Long live the king. My God sent his messenger who shut the lions' mouths. They haven't touched me because I was judged innocent before my God. I haven't done anything wrong to you either, your majesty." The king was thrilled. He commanded that Daniel be brought up out of the pit, and Daniel was lifted out. Not a scratch was found on him because he trusted in his God. The king ordered then that the men who had accused Daniel be brought and thrown into the lions' pit, including their wives and children. They hadn't even reached the bottom of the pit before the lions overpowered them, crushing all their bones. Then King Darius wrote the following decree: "To all the peoples, nations, and languages inhabiting the entire earth, I wish you much peace. I now issue this command: in every region of my kingdom, all people must fear and revere Daniel's God, because he is the living God. God stands firm forever. His kingship is indestructible. God's rule will last until the end of time. He is rescuer and savior. God performs signs and miracles in heaven and on earth. Here's the proof. He rescued Daniel from the lion's power. And so Daniel was made prosperous during the rule of Darius and during the rule of Cyrus the Persian. May God bless the reading and hearing of this, God's holy word."
So today we continue digging into the story of God's love and faithfulness to us who are not always so loving and faithful back to God. We began about a month ago with the story of Sarah, who had been pregnant her whole life. We heard the story of Jacob the heel grabber. And then last week we heard the challenging story of our unfaithfulness to God in the story of the golden calf. Well, today we dig into the story of Daniel in the lion's den, a story about the faithfulness of Daniel, who in a very difficult time in his life was able to remain faithful and to overcome a kingdom. Let us be together in prayer. God, the stories that you give us, sometimes we think we know them. Daniel in the lion's den may be one of those Sunday school stories we think we know. But help us to look and to look again. Help us to have open eyes and open ears and to see a story that's more powerful and more important and has more to say to us in our lives today than maybe we think it does. Amen. Daniel prayed in the morning and prayed in the evening and prayed in the afternoon. Daniel prayed in the morning and prayed in the evening and prayed in the afternoon. So where we left our story last time, if you remember, God had freed the Israelites, God's chosen people, from slavery in Egypt through a man named Moses. And as part of this, God decided to enter into a covenant relationship with the people, saying, "Look, if you do the things that I tell you to do, if you do the things that bring life for you and for everyone, then I will make of you my treasured possession." The people agreed. They were excited about that and passionate about that to begin with. But too quickly and too easily, the people decided to abandon the covenant and chose mere religion and a golden calf over relationship with the living, loving, faithful God. The fruit of that was God's anger and punishment for the people and even death for some of them. But in the end, God chooses not to destroy the people totally, not to abandon the covenant altogether, but God chooses to rekindle, to renew the covenant, and to be faithful to the people who weren't so faithful to God in return. After this, much happens, and the Israelites go through a period of governance by a group called the Judges. And this is a group, not kings, but people who were wise and could be arbiters for the people. They had disagreements and those sorts of things. They were go-betweens between God and the people. So this went along for a while, but at a certain point, the people looked around and saw other nations who had kings. And they said, you know, we want a king like other nations. So God tried to persuade them not to do it, but they persisted, so God said, fine. So God called Saul and David and Solomon, and they were rulers and kings for the people for a time. It was after Solomon's death, pretty quickly after, that the kingdom of Israel split into two kingdoms. Israel to the north with the capital of Samaria, and Judah to the south with the capital of Jerusalem. For both the north and the south during this period, there were many kings who came to power and then receded for one reason or another. And some of them were faithful to God, but many of them were not. As for the people, well, they went through what scholars call the cycle of apostasy. Apostasy means falling away. So the people, you know, where they were this close to God, and then they would kind of fall away a bit. Then they'd be in open rebellion, doing things like worshiping the golden calf, and then something would happen, and they would suffer and be punished, or something bad would happen, and they'd come back to God again and be tight, just for the cycle to continue over and over again. Well, this continued for hundreds of years. And in 722 BCE, the Assyrian army, vicious and powerful, arrived at the gates of Samaria, the northern capital, and it didn't go well. They destroyed the city, and they conquered the whole kingdom, and there was no kingdom of Israel anymore, never to return. Not too much longer later, in 605 BCE, something similar happened in the south. When the Babylonian Empire came knocking on the gates of Jerusalem, they didn't destroy the city right away, though. That took a while. First, they started off by deporting a group of exiles from Jerusalem to Babylon. They did that a second time over the years, and then finally, the third time happened in 586 BCE. This is when Babylon had had enough with the antics in Jerusalem, and they marched into the city, and they destroyed the temple, and they shipped off the final third set of exiles into exile in Babylon. This is where we pick up the story of Daniel. You see, Daniel was part of the first wave of exile sent from Jerusalem to Babylon in 605 BCE. I guess he was kind of lucky. Maybe luckier than some. He was from a well-connected family. He was handsome and educated. So he was chosen by the king's court in Babylon to be trained to be a servant of the king. And as part of that, he had a nice place to live in the palace, and we're told that he had food and drink to eat right from the king's table. So he was in exile, which is bad, but you know, it could have been worse. He was in a palace. He had good food and good drink. All he had to do was keep his nose clean. All he had to do was do what he was expected to do, and it would be all fine living for him. But we know it's true, and I think Daniel did too. We know that being a slave in a gilded cage is still being a slave. And Daniel preferred to be faithful to God rather than to live his life merely and comfortably in a golden cage. Daniel prayed in the morning and prayed in the evening and prayed in the afternoon. Daniel prayed in the morning and prayed in the evening and prayed in the afternoon. So he had this knack, Daniel did. He had a knack for balancing his faith with God while also doing the things that he was expected to do and required to do in the court of the king. He was good at doing that. And one of the reasons he was so good at it is because God had blessed him with a tremendous gift. God had given Daniel the power to interpret dreams and visions, which made him very popular with the kings of Babylon, of course. I mean, who in power wouldn't want someone around to interpret dreams and visions and to be able to predict the future? Wouldn't you like that? That's pretty good, right? So Daniel did this for a very long time. He interpreted dreams and visions for the kings of the courts of Babylon, and he was able, through that, to make his way up to very high positions of power in one of the most powerful empires in the world, while also maintaining his faith in God at the same time. So it was in 539 BCE, 66 years after Daniel was first brought to Babylon as an exile, that Darius the Mede took control of the Babylonian Empire. He was part of the Persian Empire, and I won't go into all the details there, but basically there was a change in power. And Darius the Mede comes into power, and he likes Daniel. And I think he needs Daniel. So he decides to take Daniel, who had worked his way up to third in command, he decides to take Daniel and make him the number one guy, which was great for Daniel, I guess, but it also made Daniel some powerful enemies. There were some jealous colleagues who wanted Daniel's power, so they conspired to try to find some dirt on Daniel, to expose him and to undermine him and to take him out of the equation. But they tried and they tried and they could not find any dirt on Daniel, so they decide that they're going to create some dirt of their own. So they go to the king. It's like, look, king, you're so wonderful and amazing and you're new to power. Why don't you do this? Just take 30 days and send out a decree across the land that nobody can worship a god or a man, nobody except you for 30 days. And if they do, well, we'll just throw them into a lion's den, which of course was a death sentence. So the king liked this idea, and he agreed, which was a problem for Daniel. Because for 66 years, he had been good at balancing this razor's edge between faith in the living God and also doing what needed to be done in the court and for his position. He was successful at this. But this was putting Daniel into a position that he wasn't willing to go to. There was a line he wasn't willing to cross. So he decides, though it meant danger, though it could have meant his life, he decides to do what he always did, which was to go into his room three times a day and to kneel down and pray in praise and thanksgiving to God. You can join me. Daniel prayed in the morning and prayed in the evening and prayed in the afternoon. Daniel prayed in the morning and prayed in the evening and prayed in the afternoon. So one day he got down on his knees and he was praying, giving thanks and praise to the living God. But you know, the jealous colleagues gather round and they see him praying, and now they have the dirt on him that they need. They go to King Darius and they squeal and tell what Daniel has done, which distresses Darius because he likes Daniel and he needs Daniel's power, and he didn't want to have to send Daniel to the lion's den, to his death. So he argued and tried to wiggle out of it, but try as he might, he was bound by his own laws and decrees. He was unable to save Daniel from himself. And so, after being unsuccessful, the guards finally take Daniel and throw him into the lion's den. And right as they do that, the king says something very interesting. The king says, you know, Daniel, to that God that you're always praying to, may God save you. It's this moment in the story where there's an acknowledgement by the king that the king can't save him, but maybe God will. Daniel's thrown into the lion's den and sealed over with a stone. And two things happen that night. First, King Darius goes back and he's distressed and he can't be entertained and he won't eat and he just tosses and turns all night, unable to sleep for what fate must be befalling Daniel and also himself. Daniel, though, he fares a little better than the king, which is unlikely, but it's true. You see, because Daniel had trusted God, because Daniel had been faithful to the God who had been faithful to him, Daniel is spared. The lions, I guess, just lick their chops in the corner but don't do anything, and we're told that not a hair on his head was harmed, not even a scratch. So the next morning, Darius wakes up and runs to the lion's den and removes the stone seal and finds something there amazing. Daniel is not had his bones crushed by the jaws of the lions. He is alive and well and couldn't be better, actually. That's when Daniel does this interesting thing. Immediately, he tries to put himself back into balance. The first thing he says to the king is, "Long live the king! My God has saved me." Faith in God on one hand and serving the king on the other. It's an important, important moment in this story. And the king takes him and saves him from the lions that, or at least lifts him out. And then there's retribution, right? For the jealous colleagues who had killed or had tried to kill Daniel, they are killed. And I guess it was kind of a thing in the ancient world. When you killed your enemies, you also killed their family, which is really bad. So it's kind of a grisly part of the story, but it's there. So after that, the king issues a decree that Daniel is to be raised up, to be feared and revered, but so is God. That Daniel's God is to be feared and revered as well. Where the king wasn't able to save Daniel, God was. And so a decree goes out across the land, giving honor and praise to the living God. It's an incredible story, and Daniel, we know, goes on to prosper greatly in the courts of the Persian kings. So I know some of you are sitting there thinking critical thoughts about Daniel, thinking to yourself, nice story, glad that Daniel survived, but you know, he's kind of a suck-up. You know, he's kind of a manipulator. He's kind of just faithful enough to God so that he can also have the comforts of the gilded cage that he wants as well. He can still keep his palace and the food and drink from the king's table and just pray every once in a while and he'll be okay. So maybe Daniel's a suck up. Maybe he's a manipulator. Maybe he's trying to have his cake and eat it too, to play it both ways, to have the best of everything. So that's a way to read this story. But it's not the only way. Because maybe Daniel's not a suck-up. Maybe he's not a manipulator. Maybe what Daniel is a subversive survivor. Daniel was an exile, right? There were a million ways that he could have had his head cut off long before the lion's den happened. But he didn't. He's able to find this balance. He's able to find that niche. He's able to maintain his faith in God and prayer life. And God is faithful to him in return. And in that way, he's able to work his way up in a foreign and hostile court, becoming the most powerful man in Babylon underneath the king. He's a subversive survivor, perhaps, that shows us a way in our world today that people in similar situations, enslaved in one way or another, can both maintain who they are, but also to overcome. So you know, this story isn't about long ago and far away. This story is about today. Because there are people in our world, near and far, who are in cages of all kinds, some gilded, some not so gilded. So many of us are enslaved by addictions and consumerism and in abusive relationships and poverty and find ourselves confined by ill health in one way or another. So many of us are enslaved. And so many of us are seeking a way to maintain who we are, to keep the essence of who we are, but also to survive and to thrive. So this story gives us a powerful illustration that enslaved and oppressed people can look at all around the world and say, that is a way to survive, to thrive, to reach a position of power, but maintaining connection so that when we get the power, we can live it out in a faithful, godly, and just way. Oh, there's risks. Daniel could have been killed many times, and so many enslaved people are. But in this story written so long and far ago, we have an example of how we can endure and to overcome. Because you know, Daniel prayed in the morning and prayed in the evening and prayed in the afternoon. Daniel prayed in the morning and prayed in the evening and prayed in the afternoon. And in that way, he overcame a kingdom.